Hi and welcome to episode 2 of Attention Please podcast on the Talking Stuff Network. We are recording this on 11th August, India time. And of course, we have back with us the great Bong Arnab Ray. Hi Arnab, welcome back.
Hello. The third episode, or the third episode, second in the array index. For those of you still programming C.
So how has the ride been so far? You've been hearing a lot of feedback.
Oh yes, it has been amazing in terms of the feedback. The feedback has been overall been positive. I think the feedback that, you know, you're no longer as good as you were before will start happening from the fifth podcast. That's when you start peaking, and that's when people start making that kind of comment. I mean, I've been hearing that about my blog from 2005, and I started in 2004. There was a 1 year in which I didn't get any feedback like that, but then people didn't read my blog also in that year. So the biggest feedback that I got was that I say too many ums, just like I did right now. The retort to that is, of course, I know that. I kind of struggle with speaking, which was why I was a little bit hesitant initially to even do this podcast. So I've been saying on Twitter that I want to do this podcast for a year now. And there's a good reason why I haven't done it. It's because I'm a little nervous talking. I'm not nervous at all while typing. When I grew up and I'd written this on Twitter, I had a speech problem. So I used to stammer. The stammering problem went away a long time ago, but the doctor said that I had this tendency where my thoughts don't keep pace with the pace of my words. So there is kind of the two threads don't often sync together, and that sometimes causes that one to go faster than the other. And that's when I start stuttering. It's I don't really have a speech impediment. And he's right. Normally when I try to talk slowly, the stutter goes away. Or when I get into the zone of speaking, that's when even the ums stop. So hopefully I'll get better as we go on. I'll become more confident. So I've heard that feedback, and I know that I have this problem with ums. I've been asked to take pauses, but I don't really want to get into that Vajpayee mode where I just stop. And it's like a pujara innings in the middle, and then I start talking. So I don't want that, so I will prefer to do the ums rather than the complete pause. Other than that, I think we've had I've had great success with my Patreon. So for those of you who don't know, I've started this Patreon page where you can make monthly contributions to the Attention Please podcast. So when I first told this to my wife, she was like shocked. Why are you asking people for money? Why are you begging? So I said, wait, hold on. Let's take a step back. What I'm getting is not because of the money. It is, in a way, the fact that when somebody pays for something, it's really the ultimate validation of your worth. So people can say anything they want, right? You know, talk is cheap. That's why people give gifts. Because that is considered to be, for better or for worse, the ultimate validation of your value, that I'm giving you a gift or I'm doing something. So, you know, I've had it. Let's say, without going into details, I've had a terrible year this year. So the validation of the number of people who have signed up within like 24 hours has been absolutely amazing for my ego. That people are willing to pay this amount of money to hear me talk every month. So it's been amazing, this validation. I thank you. I really, really needed it. The money is good, but the validation is even better. So I would like to thank three, based on the tiers that I have. By the way, I noticed that The Wire also has three tiers. I also have three tiers. And that's a coincidence. I made my tiers before I saw the tiers that The Wire has. So I'd just like to thank Nikhil Rao, Rahul Mohanty, and Raghuram Janak for their pledges. And for those of you who don't know, and I'll be tweeting the link, I have a Patreon page where you can make a monthly donation to the Attention Please podcast. If you like this, if you want to support quote-unquote independent media, then I guess everybody calls themselves independent media. It's like saying somebody is the greatest of all time. So it's been much overloaded and much abused, but I would still like to call myself an independent voice. If you want to support an independent voice, there's my Patreon page. And I honestly feel that this is the only sustainable media model that's available nowadays. I mean, if you take money from corporations, it's obvious you will talk about the corporations. So independent media, anything independent, can only persist through voluntary donations. That's my belief. Let's see how this works out.
That pretty much says it all. We are making tweaks to the podcast too based on feedback, and we have a little bit more structure compared to the first two episodes. So let's start off with our first segment. This is basically just a roundup of all the news that didn't matter, probably, because going by our rundown, and we call it "This Actually Happened." So take it away, Arnab. What do you want to talk about here?
The first thing that I want to talk about is Kejriwal and his Daru party. So it was, again, such a great validation for me. When Kejriwal first came onto the scene, I had said, and at that point of time, it was very unpopular to say it, that this guy is a fraud. He has fraud written all over him. And there was a reason why I called him a fraud, was that a guy who's been posted in Delhi for all these years as a civil servant and hasn't been transferred once, whatever he is, he knows how to play the game. That we can definitely say from that. He's not really an Aam Aadmi. And over the years, it's been evident that he isn't. And many people have said, Arnab, why are you picking on Kejriwal? I mean, everybody has a free drinky. I mean, absolutely. I agree. That's why people get into politics, so that they can live on somebody else's dime. I mean, otherwise, why would anybody do politics? People literally bribe other people to get votes. Why do they do it? Because it's an investment. And I get that. But the fact is, this person, and he still does it with that 5 rupee pen and this whole Dhongi Baba thing that he has going about being a fakir, that part is grating. Come out. I mean, he's not a bad chief minister. I would say, if you rank the chief ministers, even though I would call him a glorified mayor of a city, I mean, he doesn't really compare. His chief ministership does not compare to a chief ministership like Mamata Banerjee. She rules over a much more complex state. But even if we consider him to be a mayor, he's a pretty good chief minister, I would say. But it's this kind of virtue signaling that he engages in that makes him a ripe candidate for parody. And I think he should realize it. What is good is that I don't think he's tried to defend himself. I think he's going with the, I did it, so what? And I think that's exactly what he should do. I think moving forward, we want to see Kejriwal become like Sharad Pawar. In a way, he is, if you look at his pictures. But Sharad Pawar is a good administrator. He likes to eat, definitely. And it shows. Kejriwal, I want him to go there. And I want him to be honest about why he's in politics. If he's honest that way, then yes, I will consider him to be honest. Now, the other big surprise was Kejriwal saying that he won't be in the Mahagathbandhan. Now, that part of it, I really can't figure out why. I would guess that he realizes that, you know, his odds of being the prime minister. I mean, from day one, he's always wanted to be the prime minister. I don't think he's going to settle for the railway ministry. So there's no chance in hell that he will become the prime minister, given that there are at least two or three bigger candidates in front of him. And in any case, with his four MPs that he has, there's no chance that he'll ever be prime minister. So I think it's better for him. I also believe that he stays out of the Mahagathbandhan. I don't think even the Mahagathbandhan will really care, because he doesn't bring anything to the table. I mean, four MPs is nothing. And that will allow him to reclaim the best spot that he's always had, which is as an anti-corruption crusader. I mean, if you were seen on stage hugging Lalu Prasad Yadav, at that point of time, all your street cred of being an anti-corruption crusader goes out the window. So it's a good decision that he's not part of Mahagathbandhan. Also, I believe it doesn't hurt the Mahagathbandhan any, because he brings nothing to the table. Moving on, the NDTV sting. So I saw that, and for those of you who haven't seen it, NDTV did a sting on the people who were responsible for some of the cow lynchings, and they confessed on camera in something which was eerily reminiscent of Babu Bajrangi and the Tehelka expose many years ago. Of, first of all, you know, the guy who was the undercover reporter pretended to be an RSS person and the people who actually did the lynching. They felt validated, so they decided to brag. They, of course, screwed themselves in the process. But here's the thing. I saw the program, and the BJP, everybody who was BJP or supporting the BJP, they went at NDTV with that same old, why don't you cover blah, blah in Kerala and Bengal. Please stop. Please stop doing that. And I'll tell you why. When you're representing the party, which is in power, and you have a video, and unless you are claiming that the video has been doctored, when you have a video where a person is bragging about murdering people and bragging that the police basically knows and they're absolutely fine with it, you should not go with what happened in another state, okay? Because you are the ruling party. It doesn't matter what happened in another state. Okay, let's say something happened in another state and NDTV does not cover it. Sure, because NDTV is biased just in the same way that Times Now is biased. By the way, when NDTV was doing this thing, Times Now had latched onto Shashi Tharoor and Headgear as if that was the real issue. So everybody has their own channel. So if you go to NDTV and try to, and your argument is you guys are biased, okay, let's buy that. Let's buy the fact that NDTV is biased. I will tell you, yes, NDTV is biased. Srinivasan Jain is about as neutral as Shakur Rana in Faisalabad and the ball gets Javed Miadad back. Okay, he's that neutral. But that is not the issue here. The issue is the failure of the Uttar Pradesh government. And again, does this happen everywhere? Yes, it does. You have the political party in power. You have their base. You have them feeling that, okay, the police won't touch us. The police are in cahoots with the local politicians. That happens in Bengal. That happens in Kerala. That happens in Uttar Pradesh. And that's true. But at this point of time, if you are representing the party that is under the scanner, it is horrible optics for you to keep on harping on what happens in Bengal. Okay, you have to come up with something better. It really, really was making me cringe because every time those guys had just one standard response. Moving on to the great IKEA opening. So there was a word, there's a Bengali word called hujug. I don't know how you would kind of translate it into English, but in India, when there was to be, like every year in book fair, they would bring some French author. Once they got Derrida. So Derrida is not a French. Is he a French author? I have no idea. So they got Derrida. And there are many people who thought that he was Bengali because he's Derrida, right? So there was a friggin' riot to see Derrida from people who didn't even know who he was. So even I don't know who he was, actually. Which shows how intellectual I am. So, but I didn't go there, by the way. But I had gone to the book fair that day. I didn't go to where Derrida was. But there was pandemonium. It was as if Mithun Chakravarti was there. And people didn't even know who he was. But they were just there because hujub. And this thing which I saw at IKEA was just like that. I just cannot believe. I mean, it must be great news for IKEA, of course. This is, I think, the greatest validation Sweden has got after Bofors. it's Sweden's greatest moment after Bofors. So I just want to see how this plays out. I'm guessing that IKEA is going to, first of all, is all of us who buy IKEA furniture here. No, it's, I mean, IKEA is not a premium brand. It's really graduate student furniture, which is why all my furniture is IKEA. I only buy IKEA because it's goddamn dirt cheap. And I don't know if you guys know it, or I don't know if they're selling it, but their bed sheets, they have a line of bed sheets called Indira.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yes. So I don't know if they're going to be selling that in India. But I'm curious to see if this kind of madness persists. I think IKEA with their free food, bottomless coffee, I think it's going to be a big hit in India. I want to see how long they're going to be able to keep up with that. They have to change their business model. But it was an amazing video to see, you know, people literally rushing IKEA, like, you know, Amitabh Bachchan, when you should see Amitabh Bachchan in his heydays, that was what used to happen. I've seen that happen in Calcutta.
I don't know if you got the WhatsApp forward though. I mean, nothing is a secret in India, right? So somebody had sent a screenshot from the IKEA meeting. Apparently, if this is true, then forecasted revenue based on the huge numbers of people coming in, they were expecting 32 crores on day one, apparently. I don't know how far, whether this is for day one or whether it's for their forecast for the month. But in contrast, they made something like 93 lakhs.
There's a big difference between footfalls and sales, right? Were they expecting 32 crores of loss from the food?
32 crores of revenue overall, but they got apparently little less than 1 crore.
But that's because it was exactly. Hyderabad, right? That's one of the richest parts of India. I mean, I heard they're going to open a store in Calcutta. So I would be really curious as to how that goes out and what their projection is going to be for Calcutta.
Moving on, of course, we had the What Song contest last week, and honestly, I was surprised by the number of entries we got and the number of instantaneous correct entries we got. So, of course, for those of you who are still guessing, the song from last week was... And our winner, chosen at random, identifies himself or herself as GSR. So, GSR, I've sent you a mail asking you for your address. And I'll be sending you one of Arnab's book of my choice. So, congrats on that. And Arnab, over to you for the song of this week. It's your choice.
Yes, so let's...
You want to give a small hint or you just want to go ahead and...
Just go ahead and play it.
That's the song. And just tweet in to us. You can tweet in to Arnab or you can tweet in to me. Write in to us at appodcast@talkingstuff.net. Just tell us what song it was and what movie. And of course, I'll send you one of Arnab's books. And moving on to our feature story this week. We're talking about nepotism, Kangana and courage. Oh, let's see what Arnab has to say.
Sure. So one of the headlines which kind of leapt out at me was Arjun Tendulkar bowling to the Indian batsmen as they prepared for the Lord's Test. And you know, we're recording it after the first day of full play, and we can see how well that went. Of course, looking at India bat, I tweeted that, you know, the only reason I could think of Arjun Tendulkar bowling was just to give Shikhar Dhawan his confidence back that he could actually play five balls without getting out. But there was like, why was Arjun Tendulkar of all people bowling to the Indian batsmen, and whether he was really a good just because he has Arjun and you have Sam Curran? That's the only thing I can think of why you would want Arjun Tendulkar. But it kind of comes back to, of course, it's obvious why. It kind of comes back to privilege. And I wanted to do this. I wanted to write a post on this for a long time, but I never was getting around to it. So years ago, I mean, it must have been years now, that Kangana Ranaut brought up this whole nepotism business in Bollywood. That everybody, and it's of course gapingly obvious that quote unquote nepotism exists. But let's take a step back. That's not really nepotism. First of all, the word, I mean, I understand the general sentiment of what Kangana Ranaut was trying to say, but that's not what I would call nepotism. See, nepotism is when you are a government servant, let's say, and you decide to hire your wife's brother. Now, this is nepotism because you don't own the government. You have been given a responsibility by the government to hire people, and it's based on a trust. It's based on the trust that you will do your due diligence and choose the best person. And you decide to betray that trust. That's nepotism. You decide to betray that trust because you decide to give the job to a relative. That's nepotism. So nepotism is stealing. It's stealing something which belongs to someone else and giving it to someone else. You're giving it to that person because that person happens to be related in some form. It could be a blood relation. It could be a caste relation. It could be I had a crush on that person, whatever it is. But some kind of personal reason by for which you gave something which legitimately should have gone to somebody else. Now, with respect to Karan Johar, who he casts in his film is his decision. It's literally his dad's money. And if you have read Karan Johar's biography, you will realize that what really comes out through every page is the privilege that he's always had. And he is, and the privilege is, and again, it's evident to us, people like us who don't have that privilege, because the privilege to him is very natural. So he says that, you know, when growing up, they were not very rich. His dad's movies used to flop. They were only bailed out by his other businesses. So he really had, you know, I don't think he uses these words, but you know, it was really a middle class kind of existence. Of course, we went to like holidays in Europe and everything. So for him, he grew up in this world where all his friends were in movies, and he started making movies by being assistant director to Aditya Chopra. And of course, Aditya Chopra is again quote unquote nepotist. So the entire structure on which Bollywood is based, and it's their own money, so they kind of, you know, hired their own family or their friends. And that cannot be considered to be nepotism. It's considered to be privilege. So that's why Arjun Tendulkar gets to bowl to Kohli. That's why Suhana Khan, you know, gets to be on Vogue. It's because they have privilege. And what I find extremely ironic is when BuzzFeed, which is full of privileged kids, get all angry that there is somebody with greater privilege exercising that privilege more than they are. So all of us are born on this continuum of privilege. I have become what I am today because, you know, I grew up in a place where, you know, my dad was a PhD. I did my PhD. My dad was in economics. I'm in computer science. That kind of privilege did not carry over. I took a conscious decision, actually, by the way. So let me tell you a little personal story. That was one of the feedbacks I got. Arnab, we need to hear more of your personal stories. So after my class 12, I sat for my joint entrance examinations, which was the West Bengal board. And my joint entrance exam did not go well, to put it mildly. So in my high secondary, which was the class 12 exam, I had a rank of 27 in the state exam. In my joint entrance exam, I came 732. And that pretty much ensured that I would not get computer science, electrical, or any of the things that I really wanted to get. So I ultimately got metallurgical engineering in Jadavpur University, and I was in two minds whether I should do engineering or whether I should study economics in Presidency College. I'd sat for the entrance exam. I'd come first in the entrance exam. And so I got my admission there. So I had this choice. And my father, I mean, he didn't want to exert pressure on me, of course. But, you know, my father's friends, I remember one of his friends who's a very famous economist. He came to our house and he said, you know, that, you know, just go ahead and take economics. Your father is here. I am here. You don't have to worry. I mean, if you do decently well, we have people and we'll send you to Cornell. You'll get to Cornell, you'll get to good places. And just do what you're doing. And basically, you have privilege which other people don't. At that point of time, I was in my rebellious phase. I was just 18. And one of the reasons was I did not want to do that because I did not want to have my father. As it is, I felt that my father and my parents were having an inordinate say in my life. And I did not want the scope of that to increase. So I decided, no, I will stay here and I will sit for my joint entrance exams again and get into computer science, which I did. And even after that, that was one of the reasons why I did not do my MBA, try to do my MBA. Because again, I wanted to get away. So I wanted to come to the US, get away and do things my own way. What I'm trying to say is that that doesn't mean that I rejected my privilege. My privilege was always there. The fact that I grew up in a place with books, the fact that I grew up in an academic environment obviously impacted who I am today. So coming back to this thing, everybody, all of us, if you're listening to this podcast, you have privilege. There are obviously people who are more privileged than you, so more doors will open for them. But that's not because of, it's not because of nepotism. So let's speak very clear as to what nepotism is and what privilege is. Now, some of you will think that Arnab is now talking like the social justice warriors, right? Why is he talking, going on about privilege? See, where I differ from the so-called social justice warriors is, unlike them, I don't think this is a solvable problem. The world is inherently unequal. That's what Darwin says. If it was equal, then there would be no extinction of anybody. There would not be survival of the fittest. There would be no notion of fittest. So the notion of being fittest is, in a way, privilege. It's your genetic privilege. It's why when I see some people pigging out at buffets and they don't get fat, they have that privilege. They have the genetic privilege of having high metabolism, which I don't. So everybody, all of us have some kind of privilege. It's not obviously immediately obvious what kind of privileges we have. I mean, in case of Ambani's son, it's very obvious, of course. So coming back to the problem where I differ from social justice warriors is that I don't think that the asymmetry in privilege can essentially be rectified by redistribution. It's never worked anywhere in the world. It has led to the Cultural Revolution in China. It has led to the killing fields of Cambodia. It has led to some of the greatest genocides that the world has ever seen. When somebody decides that they will basically equalize privilege, it just never happens. That's the basic problem with communism, because it's actually anti-Darwin. It cannot work. It looks great on paper. Anybody who has even a little bit of idealism will love communism. That's the problem. But if you try to implement it in the real world, because it fundamentally does not sync with the way the world works, it will always fail. So the Arjun Tendulkars of the world will always bowl to Virat Kohli. Now you can take the privilege away from Arjun Tendulkar and give it to Arnab Ray. Okay, you can transfer privilege from one person to another. That you can always do, but that still doesn't solve the problem. There will be a asymmetry in privilege. The individual might change because there's always going to be a finite amount of resources and only a finite amount of doors. There is only one issue of a fashion magazine and only one person can make it to the cover. Communist, you can't split it into 100 little pieces and put a face of everyone on that cover. That will never work. So privilege can only be moved from one point to another. It cannot be gotten rid of. Which now brings me to Kangana Ranaut. So I personally have never been a fan of Kangana Ranaut, the personality. I think she's a good actor. She's a little limited in the roles that she can do. I think she's best when she does those slightly on the edge kind of roles like she did in fashion. I think she's very good there. She also has this very, very malleable look. She never looks the same way. I think that's something. I mean, whenever she gets, unlike Shah Rukh Khan, who plays Shah Rukh Khan every character, every movie, she has this, she can kind of change herself a little bit. I think that's really, really good. I mean, she's a good actor. I don't think she's a great actor. But I've always found her public positioning to be just that only, public positioning. So when she goes on about feminism, when she goes about nepotism, it's just before a movie. And of course, I want to say that, but nowadays you can say that without being piled on. And so you can't say that there's a rider. You can't say that and everything goes out the window the moment you say something good about Modi. That's it. At that point, everybody turns on you. So it was amazing. So here's this Kangana Ranaut who was getting the absolute support of our media. And then, God, I can imagine why she felt that we are at a stage where saying good things about Modi brings about good karma, which it might. It was amazing to see our liberal ecosystem turn on her like this in a flash. And there were myriad articles that Kangra Ranaut is a feminist, but only for herself. And the only reason, how did this sudden realization come about? When this realization came about, because she said something good about Narendra Modi, and that is a line we shall not cross. Which actually brings me to the big point of courage. So one of the things that one of the little Kool-Aid things that our liberal janta likes to drink is that by protesting against Modi, they are showing courage. I agree. In some places, you are showing courage. If you are against Modi in Gujarat, you are perhaps showing courage. If you are against Adityanath in Uttar Pradesh, you are showing courage. But if you're against Modi in Bengal, which reminds me of this joke I once read in Reader's Digest. It was humor in uniform, for those of you who used to read a lot of Reader's Digest. I used to when I was growing up. So apparently there was this American soldier and this Russian, it was USSR, then Russian soldier during World War II, and they were having this conversation. And the American soldier was saying that we live in the freest country in the world. I can enter the White House, walk straight up, and bang my fist on the table in front of the president and tell him exactly what I think of Harry S. Truman. The Russian said, well, Russia is the freest country in the world. I can walk into Kremlin, bang my fist on the table and tell the president exactly what I think of Harry S. Truman. So that just shows the same thing in different places doesn't show courage. And Kangana Ranaut, by now speaking for Modi, has shown some amount of courage, I would say. Now, again, I will not say that that actually comes from conviction. I would say that also comes from the desire to have some attention, please. But without going into that, the point that I wish to make is, and I felt it myself, again, coming to a personal story, being not avowedly liberal, and I kind of raising my fingers, you can't see me, and doing this air inverted commas here. Being supposed, not wanting to be liberal in that sense, is a courageous stand as an author. I have shown courage by doing that. If I go to the Jaipur Lit Fest of the world and talk about Hindu patriarchy or Modi fascism, that's not courage there, by the way. That is what people expect you to say. That is preaching to the choir. That's when people stand up and applaud. It's what you say there that's courage. When you believe that even despite what might happen to you, I'm not going to say that publishers or people are going to kill me or they're going to lynch me, but they'll definitely remove me from their platforms. And that's happened. And this podcast is an effort on my side to kind of build my own platform because, I realize there's only so much cribbing I can do that I don't get platforms. Ultimately, okay, sure, build your own. So courage for me, and this is the point that I wish to make in this main feature thing, is that when somebody says that somebody is showing courage by speaking against Modi or doing something else, you have to always look at the context. In many places, it's not courageous. In many places, that is what is not courageous. That is going with the flow. Being quote-unquote liberal in literary circles is not courage. It's going with the flow. Okay. Saying the same thing in an interview with Modi, perhaps, yes, I would say that's courage. Saying that in Gujarat, yes, that could be courage. But it's, again, saying something against Modi in Bengal, no, that's not courage at all. So let's move on to our new section on recommendations, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are starting this week. We also have recommendations every week, maybe movies, maybe something on TV, books. But yeah, you'll certainly get to get some time pass picks from Arnab and I. So over to you, Arnab. What do you have for us?
So this week, I finished watching Fauda on Netflix. So I saw the I saw two seasons of Fauda. For those of you who don't know, Fauda is a Israeli TV series acted in by somebody who was, the hero is, I don't think he was Mossad, but he was some kind of commando who was working for their special forces. And I think the director was also ex-Mossad, if I'm not wrong. It's basically Homeland, if Homeland was made by people who actually knew what they were talking about. It's amazingly well made, Fauda. I mean, some people say the first season's better, some people say the second season is better. I'm going to say the second season was better. But I can understand why people would also think the first season was better. The first season was perhaps more even-handed. The second season was much more, I would say, one-sided. But what struck me about Fauda was it's very Israeli in the sense it's unapologetic. Okay, this kind of thing would never happen in India. We would be doing all kind of monkey balancing because you don't want to piss off liberals. You don't. But Fauda doesn't give an F. Fauda is, sometimes I was cringing. Saying, oh my goodness, why are they going here? Why are they using this kind of language? I'm not saying bad language. You have to see it to realize what I'm talking about. I don't want to spoil it for you. But the kind of, it's very real, of course, and it might reflect how people in that world feel about another community. But the kind of rawness of the language and the kind of rawness of the situation, I'm not just talking about, when I say rawness, I'm not like saying, you know, something. I don't know if I can say that on Apple, but you know, that for me is not raw. Yeah, I don't think that's, in this day and age, that's not rawness. Nobody cares. The rawness there, nobody uses swear words there. Even if they are, they're not raw. And they don't come out well in translation. But it's the amount of hatred that people have for each other. It comes out in their speech and they don't have a filter on that. So yes, there is a lot of violence in the, but the violence, you kind of, you know, you see through it and you know what's going to happen. It's like a, you know, familiar action tropes. But the dialogues and It's not like the kind of dialogue which will make you stand up and throw chawanis at the screen. I'm not talking about that kind of dialogue. I'm talking about like real dialogue, the kind of dialogue which you would expect from those characters, but which many TV series just don't have. They just don't want to go there. For the summing up, goes there. Now, you might not like where it goes, and I'm pretty sure that it will divide a lot of people in India if they see it. But at least it's intellectually honest to go there. And I appreciate it for doing it. Plus, it's pretty taut, gripping. It's very fast. There are no like filler episodes where nothing happens. Like Game of Thrones has, like every season, about 60% of its episodes you will see are filler episodes. Fauda is nothing like that. Like every second is chock full of action. So definitely recommend Fauda. For those of you who haven't seen it.
And Fauda, of course, is on Netflix. I know for a fact it's also available in the Indian version of Netflix too. My recommendation is something on the other platform on Amazon Prime. So I happened to catch The Night Manager. So that's also a 6-episode short story. I believe it came on some US network. I don't know which one. But it is available on Amazon Prime now. And it also stars Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki, right? I mean, yeah, who played Loki in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's great. It also has Hugh Laurie. I don't want to talk too much about what it's about. Again, you little bit parallels to Fauda probably would not be right. But yeah, it's a thriller, just to be to say as less as possible. So Night Manager is on Amazon Prime, just 6 short episodes. I believe season 2 has been commissioned. So before that comes on, you might want to catch season 1.
So is Night Manager, so are you saying it's a political thriller? I have no idea what Night Manager is, by the way. So this is a genuine question.
I wouldn't want to say too much about it. No, it's nothing political.
Okay, is it a mystery? Is there like somebody gets killed and we don't know who it is? Who killed? Is it that kind of
thing? It's not a mystery either. It's just a thriller in the sense... I would want to say as even a spy thriller would be a bad choice of words. So just watch it. I think it's a pretty decent
one
watch.
One thing I forgot to say about Fauda, for those of you who, so a little bit of knowledge about Palestinian politics would really help in understanding FAWDA. So I'll give you what you need to know. So you need to know that with respect to Palestine, if you look at the continuum of the political parties to see where they stand, Fatah is kind of centrist. So Fatah is Yasser Arafat. Then to the right of them is, from a Sunni thing, is Hamas. Okay. From Shia, it's Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not shown there, but just FYI. Then to the right of them is the Islamic Jihad. And then to the right of them is ISIS. So all of these come together in that, in FAWDA, and they don't explain this politics, by the way. So you might be, if you don't know this, because they expect you to know this, and for the audience, they possibly know it, but for those of us who don't know the minutiae of Palestinian politics, some of the characters, you might not understand why they're behaving this way. So I hope that, you know, this one, and of course you can obviously Google and Wikipedia things if you want to know more, but this would really help you understand some of the subtle politics which is going on in FAWDA. You can still understand it without it, but I think this will really make you this will elevate FAWDA to another level to see, you know, how sophisticated you can have a action thriller, you know, how much it can say about politics also.
There you go. So that kind of wraps up this episode too. You want to shout out your Twitter handle and blog and give a shout out to the Patreon too?
Sure. So my Twitter handle, for those of you still don't know it, is greatbong at greatbong, and my blog is at greatbong.net. And once again, I have a Patreon page. It's greatbong again. How original. And so, if you like what you hear, and again, it's not so much the money, but it's the validation. It's like, we love what you're doing and we're going to put money on it. That really, you know, makes me excited to wake up and, like, you know, do this program. It really helps. And so, you know, one thing I would like to make clear, because this is not just because there is something like Patreon, this is not a paid podcast. There will be no special content for those who are patrons of this show. So everything is available for everyone. It's kind of like CPM in that way. So the Communist Party of India, Marxist, we're a little bit like that. So you don't really get any premium access except the gratitude of me. So there's nothing else that you get. So everything that they get, you guys get. So for the free tier, everything is available. It's all access. And it will always be like that.
Great. You do get loads of good karma from all of us. So that's not something to sneer at. As for me, I'm on Twitter at the Vikram Mohan. And the network is on as at Talking Stuff Net. And if you do have time, also check out our technology podcast, which is called the Talking Tech Podcast. Very original again. So it's available wherever this podcast is available too. We talk, Vinayak and I, every episode, we talk about tech for the non-techie. So be sure to subscribe to that too. And for feedback on this, you can reach out to Arnab or I, or you can send an email at appodcast@talkingstuff.net. And or tweet to us or send carrier pigeons. And of course, we are also there on talkingstuff.net online. There's a theme somewhere over here. So Arnab, until next time, any last words for the road?
I just hope it rains out for the rest of the test match. That's all I would like to say.
Okay, let's pray for rains. This is me, Vikram Mohan, signing out. And thanks, Arnab. See you next time. And